You know, we've all done things that were just plain downright stupid when we were in our youth. And, you know, some of the kind of things that, you know, you would see a person on screen saying, do not try this at home. All right? Those kinds of things. And I'm as guilty as the next guy. I traveled with a ministry team back in the summer of 1994. And I was a young guy. I was 20 years old. And we were doing ministry teams visiting different churches. This particular church, I was in West Virginia. West Virginia is coal mining country. West Virginia is hills and rivers and railroads. I mean, that's all that's in West Virginia. I've been there. I know. If you're from West Virginia, no offense, that's the way it is, all right? And I was in this little church, and we were in the basement meeting with a teen group to which we were running a rally that week. And our mission team called Neighborhood Bible Time, all of the evangelists would do something to kind of get the teens going. We called these, I think you would call them theatrical bribes, all right? And the gist of it is, if you do this, I will do this, all right? So we wanted them to, you know, bring their friends or memorize their verses or do something. And so we would make out these outlandish promises. Now, some guys, they were bold. They said they would eat a goldfish, drink it down, living, a live goldfish. And that was not my thing. So I got this idea, okay, well, I'm not going to eat a goldfish, but I'll tell you what. Teenagers, if you bring X number of visitors tomorrow night to our rally here, I will drink any 8-ounce glass of edible material, whatever you want to put in it, I'll drink it down. That was a dumb thing to do. Absolutely stupid. Especially to put my health in the well-being in the hands of a teenager. What was I thinking? So, but you know what? I set the mark so high, I thought, there is no way. I don't know where they found these kids. They must have gone into the mines and dragged them out. And they had all of the kids plus there the next night. And the drink was ready, and it was sitting in there in a glass dish and the glass in the glass cup, and it was kind of green and white. It just is a little bit, ugh. And but they had met the mark, and after some theatrical delays, you know, and get them all excited, I lifted my throat and I lifted the glass and tried to get as much of it to go right past my tongue, right down my throat, and get it over with fast. I did finish it, set down the glass, smiled like this, and tried to dismiss the group to the other evangelists to take them out and do their games. They were not happy. They were expecting me to do something like keel over, faint, throw up, belch, something. And I didn't do any of those things. And so they hesitated. I dismissed them again. And finally, with some reluctance, they went out the door. Then I turned and ran for the kitchen. By this time, just a few seconds, my whole esophagus was on fire, and I could feel whatever was down there was making its way back up. And later, I was told that somebody had poured at least 8 ounces, or not 8 ounces, but about half of it was Tabasco sauce, so about 4 ounces straight Tabasco. Anyway, it took me about 30 minutes just to kind of come back to equilibrium. It just was not good. Since then, I have never done that again. I have never promised to drink anything that a teenager might put into a glass. Not going to happen. The rest of the summer, I swallowed eggs, and that worked for me. Eggs go down quick, and you hardly taste them. Anyway, and a pie, occasional pie in the face. Hey, maybe you've not done something so foolish with your mouth as I did as to take something in, but my guess is everybody in this room has done something foolish with their mouth when it comes to what goes out of it, which is the subject of our message today, taming the terrible or the troublesome tongue. What a difficulty this is. And James admits it to us, and he asks us to give careful attention to our tongue, because if you want your faith to behave the right way, It needs to behave the right way. This chapter is about our words. Real faith watches its words. Words are important. And if your faith means anything, makes any difference in your life, it needs to impact the words that you say. Now, you notice how James, would you follow along with me? James chapter 3, how he sets this up. James chapter 3, verse number 1, the Bible says, "My brethren," already been there, new subject, "be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same as a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which, though they be so great, are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth." James says, you have a fireball in your mouth, and you better look out, because it's going to set your world on fire. Well, how in the world am I going to be, how am I going to get this under control? How am I going to keep from using my tongue to undermine my faith? Which is very easy for any person in this room to do. Well, I believe he gives us three things that will help us in this text. Three reasons why we must control the tongue. All right, here they go. Number one, if you're looking for an outline, I usually provide one. But this week, due to technical difficulties, none have been provided for you. All right, so that means find your own paper if you take notes. All right, point number one. Your tongue is controlling. Your tongue wants control. Got to be careful with our words, because the tongue wants to assert itself and take control of your life. Now, this is an issue, James says, because many were wanting to be teachers. The word masters in verse number one, do you see this word masters? It's related to the Spanish word maestro. Anyone know what maestro means? Teacher, right? So he says, do not be many masters. The word means teacher. Don't be quick to teach, because when you teach, you end up saying a lot of things that you will later be held accountable for, which he says will receive the greater condemnation. So don't be in a hurry to be a teacher. Don't be in a hurry to be a speaker, because when you speak, you're liable to get in trouble with your tongue. In fact, the Bible says in Proverbs chapter 10, in verse number 19, that in the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin. That's a funny way to say it. But we would say this: when you say a lot, you're going to sin a lot. That's the way we'd say it. That's the way it goes. You say a lot, you're going to sin a lot, so watch how much you say. Wise then are you not to say so much. This really leads into the first idea under your tongue is controlling that James is after. It controls, it wants control. And when it gets control, it's going to lead you easily into sin. We see this in verse number 2, where he says, "For in many things we offend all." Now, you read the word offend, and what you normally think is, you know, he said something, she didn't like my dress, they were offended by, you know, I didn't show up at their party, you know, and they got all offended, and we've been enemies, you know, for the last 23 years. And that's why we read the word offend. That is not what it means here. All right? The word means to stumble into wrongdoing or to trip someone into sin. In many things, we stumble into sin. What's he saying? There are many ways for us to sin. We do it all the time. We stumble, we fall, we lose our temper, we have bad attitudes, we hurt other people. Hey, but if any man doesn't sin, doesn't offend, stumble into sin with his tongue, the same as a perfect man and able to bridle his whole body. James, back to one of his favorite words, bridle. We saw that back in chapter number 1, bridle your tongue. This is verse number 26 of chapter 1. He's back to that word, bridle your tongue. Hey, you're a perfect person if you can bridle your tongue. You know, I don't have to say this to you. You know it. I know it. I mean, it's so easy for me, even when I want to do right, to say something wrong. And I'll say the wrong word. I'll say it at the wrong time. I'll have the wrong attitude about it, and I'll end up hurting somebody. I can't go through a day without saying something wrong. At the top of my sin list every day, you know what's at the top of my sin list? When I'm asking forgiveness, you know, the repentance part of prayer, when I'm saying, God, I do this, and forgive me. You know what's at the top of my list? T-O-N-G-U-E. I think that spells tongue. Because I have the same kind of problem with it that you do. I'm impatient, I'm in a hurry, and I say things or I say them in a wrong way. Whew! How in the world are we going to get... You know, there's only one person, one kind of person, that gets it right with his tongue every day, and that's a perfect person. As far as I know, there's only been one of those to walk the planet Earth. Right? And his name is, this perfect man is Jesus. We read about him, Peter says in 1 Peter 2:22, who, speaking of Christ, did no sin. It's one of the texts, five texts, I believe, in the New Testament that say Jesus was sinless. It's unique in the fact that it says, neither was guile or deceit found in his mouth. Peter is flabbergasted. Here's a sinless guy who also did not sin with his tongue. That's really emphasizing what James is saying here. If you can bridle your tongue and you don't sin with your tongue, you've bridled the whole man. You have kept the whole man from sinning because the tongue is the easiest part of your body to sin with. We all do it every day. Hey, but there was another guy who came pretty close to that. You know his name. In fact, I wasn't even thinking about adding it until I was reading the book in other study this week, Job chapter 2, verse number 10. Job is said three times in the first two chapters of the book of Job. He was perfect and upright, one who feared God and eschewed or shunned evil. And then we read about this in chapter 2, verse 10. After Satan has afflicted him, down to putting him in a disease that has boils head to foot. His wife says, why don't you curse God and die? And Job responds, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we not receive good at the hand of God? Shall we not also receive evil? In all this, look what it says. Did not Job sin with his lips? Now that doesn't mean that he never sinned with his lips. It means in this particular trial, he didn't let go and let somebody have it. Not his wife, not God. He did not, chapter 1 says, he did not charge God foolishly. He held his tongue. This is what we're after today. This is what James is after. True religion, pure religion, and undefiled before God and the Father is this. Watch your tongue. Watch your words. It's so easy to sin with the lips. It's so easy, then, it's exceptional to meet a person who hasn't hurt you with their lips. Did your spouse do it to you this week, last month? Maybe this morning before you got in the car. It's going to happen. Why? Because we're easily drawn into sin with our tongue. So let me be very candid for a moment. How easy is it for you to sin with your tongue? You know the answer. How likely are you to sin with your tongue today? How likely is someone else that you care about going to sin against you with their tongue? Then can't you be more patient and less bothered by the spouse who spoke words that stung? Can't you be more patient with the coworker who pours out all his frustration on your desk? Can't you be more patient with a fellow churchgoer who said something he or she should not have said ever? If you know it is so easy to sin with your tongue, there ought to be a wideness in your mercy toward other people who are doing it just like you every single day. There is no doubt in my mind I have offended you at least once or twice with my words. And there's no doubt there are people no longer in this church because I've said something unintentionally, and they got offended and they left. But if we really understand the body of Christ and our own bodies, how easy it is to sin, we really should be more patient with each other. Whew. Only perfect people get through a day speaking things perfectly. This isn't the only point James makes about our tongue here, though, when he says it's controlling. And this is even more graphic. He gets into the second part and he says, I want you to think of your tongue in the terms of two analogies. Let's bring up the next slide. In verse number 3, he begins to identify an analogy he wants you to think about when it comes to your tongue. We put bits, he says in verse 3, in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Now you think about this. A powerful steed horse with muscles that could throw you or even trample you, and yet you put a tiny piece of metal harnessed to a few reins, and you can turn that entire body wherever you want it to go. You can make it trot, gallop, canter. If you know the tricks, you can do it with just a little bit. And the verse says here, turn about its whole body. Now then he goes into another analogy. Take the ship, he says. Now we've got this big ship. It can be driven of fierce winds. He's talking about a sailboat, which would have been the only boat available at that time, powered by the wind. Now that mighty hulk of mass could be pushed through the water, but it can be turned by a relatively small piece of wood called a rudder. All right? So you got these two analogies. Big strength, boat and a horse, turned by a small item. What's the analogy? Well, so verse 5, he says, even so the tongue is a little member and it boasts great things. Your tongue wants to do the same thing that the bit does to the horse and the rudder does to the ship. What do? They turn it. That's the Bible word. I'm going to use the word steer. Your tongue wants to take over and take charge. It wants to be the captain of the ship. Think this way. He wants you to think this way. It is like the rudder that wants to drive the ship its direction. Now, you don't think of your tongue having a brain, but it's almost the way James is bringing it across. Your tongue's got a brain of its own. And some of you know that what it's like. You get in a fit of rage, you get in a fit of fear, and things start coming out of your mouth, and you're like, where'd that come from? And it's like it's taken over, and it's driving your whole body. Now, some of you think, that's just a little bit out there. I don't really get that analogy. I can't think, my tongue doesn't really control any other muscle. My tongue is a muscle. You know, it doesn't control any other muscles. So that's just a little bit over the top. But you think about this for a moment. When you think about a person, it's not primarily their looks that you remember that person for, or even their income. Long after a person leaves a room, it's what they said to you or said to someone else that colors what you think about that person. If they said something good to you or to someone else in the room, you tend to think, that's a good person. I'd like to get to know that person. Contrarywise, if they said something harsh, you immediately perceive that person under the umbrella of harshness. Let me just stay out away from that thunderstorm waiting to happen. So we really do think of people in terms of their character by what they said. So the tongue, in a real sense, does steer what we think about other people. You still don't believe me? All right? Let's take another example. Boy meets girl. Boy, he can get excited just by the way the girl looks across the room or the field or the soccer stadium or wherever he happens to see her. And that might initially draw that couple together, but there is no way that woman, whoever she is going to say yes just because the guy thinks she's pretty. He has got to be able to talk to her and open up his soul and open up her soul so that they get to know each other. And one day, this beautiful couple will stand at an altar before some preacher or a justice of the peace and say their vows to each other, not because they're wonderfully attracted to each other, though that's part of it. They're really mirroring words that have been communicated through the person that has steered that relationship. It wasn't looks that made the relationship. It is the words that they shared with one another that defined who they are and glued them together as a couple. So, you've heard it said before, bringing this all together, you've heard it said before, you are what you eat. If James were here, he would be saying, you are what you speak. That's who you are. The tongue is controlling you more than you'd like to admit. Wow. Man, if that's so, I got to be more careful with what comes out of my mouth because I don't want people thinking I'm harsh, impatient, bad-tempered. I want people to think rightly about my God and my faith, and it's all being communicated through my lips. Number two, James says, not only is your tongue controlling, your tongue is consuming. I had trouble with this point. I'm giving you C's today, so I gave consuming, but it's almost like it's lethal. Because from going to talking about bits in the horse's mouth and rudders on ships, he goes, and behold, verse 5, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. We wouldn't quite say it that way, but we would say, how great a forest is set aflame by one tiny cigarette. One tiny spark. Whole thing erupts. So he's giving us examples of how destructive, how lethal, how dangerous the tongue is when he says it's like a wildfire. You just let one word slip the wrong way and you can set the whole thing ablaze. And some of you have been in that. You've been around family. You know how family reunions are. Everybody is wonderful and loving and appreciates everybody dearly. That is until Cousins Custer or whatever his name is shows up. And he's already been heavy on the bottle and it's not even 9 a.m. And he says something. Boom! An explosion. The whole family reunion is messed up. Half the family goes down to Denny's for lunch. The other family goes over to Caro's for lunch. We are not... And they might not see each other the rest of the time. It's over. And all it did was one word, one sentence, one person offends the rest. So your tongue is like a wildfire. You can set it. You can set the whole thing ablaze with a tiny spark. Look at how he says about this fire in verse number 6. The tongue is a fire. First of all, he calls it a world of iniquity. A world is, the word is cosmos. It refers to the world system, how orderly everything runs. You got all the planets in the right place. The world of the tongue runs on iniquity. It's like a cesspool full of evil that's coming out. So the system is not ordered the right way. It's kind of a messed up world. It's iniquitous. Iniquity is a synonym for sin, and it means to be perverse or turned out of the way. This is the world of the tongue. Then he says, the tongue among our members, it defiles the whole body. You know, if you have a raunchy tongue, it's not just your tongue that's the problem. It somehow affects the whole body. It's like a disease. You know, germ gets in somewhere, but it ain't long before your whole body is sick. And this is what James is saying. It defiles the whole body. You've seen this. Somebody gets in a fit of rage, gets mad. And I mean, the words are coming out of their mouth and their whole body is marching in chorus. You know, you got the temples are bulging with the blood vessels just gushing blood, you know. And the person's shoulders are lifted up. And man, they're just about, they look like a steamroller about ready to run you over. The whole body follows the tongue. Like, it defiles the whole body. And then he says, it set on fire the course of nature. That's an odd expression to us. I had to look up the different pieces of this. Course of nature is literally wheel of birth. And that still doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I believe it to be kind of like an idiomatic expression in the first century that someone's life was thought of like a wheel. It starts at birth and keeps spinning through life till the grave. Now, we don't actually use that expression, but we have something similar to it. We call it the life cycle. And the point is, it sets on fire the whole course of your life. Wherever the wheel spins, you keep sinning with your tongue. It sets on, it's like you're burning rubber your whole life. And people behind you are eating the rubber chips as they fly off as you go. This is the point of it. You set on fire the whole, so hey, you're going to have a problem as a kindergartner, and when you graduate from kindergarten, you're still going to have a problem with your tongue. Hey, when you're a teenager, you're going to have a problem with your tongue. And when you reach retirement, your tongue doesn't retire. Your whole life is set on fire by the words that come out of your mouth. And people around are getting the fallout, the rubber chips that you leave behind. Wheel of your life is a wheel set on fire by the tongue. What a graphic image. Well, where would all this come from? End of verse 6, what does he say? It is set on fire where? Of hell. The word here for hell, and there's different ones in the New Testament, is Gehenna. It's the one Jesus used, sometimes translated Hades. In the Gospels, it referred to the rubbish heap, the garbage dump for Jerusalem, which was south of the city in a valley called the Kidron Valley that went south out of the city. They dumped all their trash there. The trash was constantly on fire, burning, and it was eaten by worms. And Jesus used the word to refer to hell because the fire of hell never burns out, and it's constantly burning. What a demonic, devilish picture he paints here. Where does the fire of your tongue come? Right out of hell. That's where your old nature, your Adamic nature, just comes out every time you open your mouth. Wow. That's sobering. And we never graduate. It's with us our whole life. If that weren't bad enough, from a ferocious fire, it goes to a ferocious animal in verses 7 and 8. Look, he says, verse 8, or 7 rather, every kind of beast and of birds, serpents, of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind. I'm surprised how many people have tried to tame animals. All kinds of animals. They live with all kinds of snakes and tigers and lions and emus and all kinds of things. But there are certain animals that refuse to be tamed, won't be brought under rule. And he says one of those is your tongue. It's unruly. Unruly in verse number 8 is the opposite of tamed. It is out of control. It is evil on fire. And a wild beast brings something new to a forest fire. It's different in the fact that a wild beast can kind of crouch and it can kind of hide in the brush or in the bush. And you walk by innocently on the hiking trail. And then suddenly, what does the wild beast do? Strikes! Just jumps right out of the bush and gets you. That's kind of the way it is with your tongue. You listen to so-and-so in your family drone on about how life's been so wrong and so difficult and everybody's trying to get them. And after about 20 minutes of it, you just had about enough. And your mouth comes open and that tongue comes right out. Listen here, young man. If you just straighten up and try to do the right thing, it isn't everybody... Yeah, you've never done that, have you? Okay. So that's his point. It's like a wildfire that's burning and consuming everything in its path. And your tongue on top of that will strike at the opportune moment, just like a ferocious or wild animal. Whew. Boy, what a pick-me-up. I really feel good about my tongue. Let's have a tongue party today. Can't you see how important then it is to be careful with your tongue? With its consuming power, it can easily destroy the things that you love, and it can undermine the faith you claim to have. In 1980, Lindy Chamberlain, a pastor's wife in Australia, was arrested and charged with one count of murder. She was accused of murdering their infant daughter. She had other children, but she was accused of murdering her infant daughter, Azariah. Some of you might remember this from the 1970s. It was like international news. She claimed that while the family was on a camping trip in Central Australia, that a dingo had entered into their tent and carted away and savagely killed their infant daughter, Azariah. Well, the medical examiners and the forensic science and whatnot eventually did not agree with Lindy's testimony and convicted her and sentenced her to life in prison for the murder of their daughter. It was a heart-wrenching thing for any family to have gone through. She was in prison for 20 years until in 2001, a 9-year-old boy in Australia was attacked by a group of dingoes. And the cases turned out to be so similar in far of degree of injury and it brought the death of the 9-year-old that the district attorney reviewed the case and exonerated Lindy and set her free after 20 years in jail. We don't like to think of our tongue, though, as being that vicious of an animal. But James is saying, yep, your tongue is like that. All right, that's the bad news. Let me give you some hope, all right? Because there is some latent in the rest of this chapter I need to give you, verses 9 to 12. Your tongue is curable. You might be thinking, with all this firepower, that I need to duck and cover, or I need to get a long chain, a heavy chain, so that the tongue can't move. At least until I'm dead, and then after that, the tongue is free to do what it wants. All right? But this isn't what James does. He doesn't tell us tame the tongue. In fact, in verse number 8, he says the tongue can no man tame. You are not going to rule it. You are not going to control it. It wants to control you. So what can you do? Notice what he says. This is helpful. Stay with me. There's some hope here, but we have to look closely. All right? Verses 9 to 12. Therewith, that's with our tongue, bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. What's his point? Out of your mouth, every day, you can bless people. You'll bless your wife and curse your son. Or you'll bless your dog and curse your wife. I mean, it's going to happen. All right? Out of the same mouth come blessing and cursing. And he said, this ought not be the way it is. In fact, fountains aren't this way. In fact, if we got bad water out of a fountain, we would say it is contaminated. There's contamination in this fountain or this spring or this well, and we're not going to drink from it. Because no well on planet Earth do you one day go and get good water and the next day bad and the next day good. It is, you either have a bad well or you have a good well. I know something about this. I had a grandpa. And he owned acreage that his father had bought way back in, I don't know, the teens or the 20s. Not far from where I lived. I lived close to my grandparents. 62-acre farm is what they called it. They farmed about 3 acres, but the rest was just woods in central Pennsylvania. On this farm, only 3 acres were farmed, but on this large property, he had a well that he had dug years earlier. And I mean, dug, like it really dig in a well like they do the old style. Pick an axe, shovel, buckets up out. And he dug this thing, I don't know, it's 30, maybe 40 feet deep. All right? And in the bottom of this was water. And I like going with my grandpa because he had this like this little what do you call this, yoke thing that he put around his neck with chain with a bucket on either end. And he would put the buckets down in, and then he'd hook it up to his yoke. He'd get under the yoke, and he'd lift the thing up, and he'd walk back up to the house. And the well was on the lower end of the property. He had to walk up the hill to get back to the house. And that's how he got his water. I thought, this is so cool. You mean, all I get to do is turn it on, you know, with a spigot. He goes down, he gets it with buckets. And I thought, this is so neat. Well, one time, something happened to the well. He thinks maybe an animal got in it. It did have a heavy lid, but it was flat with the ground. And maybe the animal got in somehow. And anyway, the well became contaminated. It was yucky water. And so for the next few years, he got these big cans. Some of them look like gas cans. They're just big water cans. And he'd load up his pickup, and he'd come into our town, into town, to our house once a week. He'd get the garden hose, he'd fill up all his cans in the pickup, then he'd drive back out to his property. He did this for years because the well was contaminated. And to this day, I don't know that the well ever did produce good water again. It was done, all finished. You know what? James is saying that's the way it is with wells. You either get good water or you get bitter water. Sweet or bitter are his words. Now stay with me. This is important. So how am I going to have a tongue that isn't a fireball, but actually offers a cure? And he tells me in verses 11 and 12. All right? Think about this. If you want figs, are you going to go to an olive tree to get figs? No. Am I going to go to a grapevine if I want figs? He asks in the verse. No. So he says in verse 12, a fountain cannot produce sweet water and bitter. What's he saying? You only get one kind of thing from a tree. You only get one kind of water from a well. So how am I going to cure a tongue that's so easily set on fire? And the point is, you have to have the right well. You have to have the right roots so you get the right fruits. So the problem then with my tongue is not that I can't control it. The problem lies behind my tongue with all that's being fed into it to come out of my mouth. So if I want to draw good water up out of my tongue in the words that I say, I need to make sure I'm getting good water from a good well. And that only means one thing. I have got to make sure that my vessel, my well, my heart is filled up with the right kinds of things. Then the right kinds of things are going to just shoot out. You're just going to shoot out blessing and shoot out encouragement and build up the body of Christ and help your spouse. But if the wrong things get in there, boy, that's what's going to come out across your tongue. So he's talking about fix your well by sanitizing your well. Fix your well because you're only going to get one kind of water out of your well. Let me give you an example of this. When I was in Mexico 18 months ago with my family, we were visiting the Wakatis, who at that time were transitioning to Greenville, where they live now. But we got to visit with them, and one day they took us over to the park, and my kids, were all playing in the park, and Dan and I were just sitting down chatting, and we're chatting in English. Not many people in Hermosillo, Mexico, 5 hours south of here, are sitting around chatting in English, not in Mexico. So this guy who was walking his dog kind of walked closer and closer to us, and he picked up, we were speaking in English, so he sat down to start talking to us in English, probably to practice. He had great English. In fact, I even commented to the fellow, Daniel was his name. I said, man, you have very good English. In fact, I knew he had good English because he was using vocabulary I don't even use. I mean, he had words that just don't ever cross my lips. They were all of the four-letter style. And so he was really educating me about vocabulary I was unfamiliar with. But he could really speak English well. So I asked him, I said, Daniel, how did you learn your English? You speak so well, though you live here in Mexico. He said, oh, it's easy. He says, I watched American movies. And then I knew exactly why he talked the way he did. If he's watching the PG-13, the R-rated movies that our industry is producing, there was no question why those words were coming out, because those were the words he was putting in the well. Did you get it? There is a cure for your tongue. You just got to sanitize it and put the right stuff down in your well. Well, what's the right stuff? What do I put down there? Cleanse. There, wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? Psalm 119, verse 9. By taking heed thereto according to thy word. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom. That's what will purify your well. If you want to speak right, you got to put the right stuff in your well. Because at the moment of conversation, unless the right stuff is in your well, it ain't coming out of your mouth. Isn't that hopeful? I can do something about it. And it might mean I have to stop watching American movies. Woo. All right. Now we're getting personal. I don't need to read books with vocabulary in there that Daniel was educating me about. All right? Put the right stuff in your well, then the right stuff is going to come out of your lips. Wow, how helpful. So this is the wrap-up. I got to finish. So we're talking about, what are we talking about? Tongue. I want the right things to be coming out of my mouth. I have got to be careful what I put in to my heart. So I'm going to finish with this story. 4 years ago, this month, in fact, this week, accidental, I stumbled across this, all right? You remember the Colorado River turned orange for days. The Gold King Mine, just south of Silverton, Colorado, had a plug burst. As I understand it, these old mines, some of them, they have water leaching into them and pulling out some of the heavy metals, and that was what happened. They were trying to mitigate the problem with this mine by putting a slow release valve on it, and in the process, the plug that held back the water inside the mine blew, pouring out 3,000 million gallons, something like that, of water, contaminated water with heavy metals like lead and iron, some of them at 400 and 325% the regulated EPA levels. Unfortunately, the EPA was there. We won't go there, all right? So the EPA and some other agencies, the plug burst and poured out all this contaminated water. Fortunately, homeowners, municipalities were alerted. And most of the trouble has been mitigated with this. I'm sure there was some cleanup involved and companies involved. But largely, a large of these heavy metals just settled down into the base of the rivers, they believe, and eventually kind of just dissipated in Lake Powell here in northern Arizona. This was the result. One little day, August 5th, 4 years ago, poof, contamination everywhere. You know, our tongues are just that way. If we're not making sure the right stuff is in the well, the wrong stuff's going to come out. God, help us with our tongue. We need it. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the people and their patient attention.